Hi, welcome to the Landscape Cranes Cleveland podcast. I'm your host, Dan Paletta. Thanks for joining us. Once again this year, Cranes recognizes the people who made a difference in shaping our region's economic narrative with its annual Newsmakers List. Here to talk about Cranes Newsmakers Awards for 2022 is our executive editor, Elizabeth McIntyre, and our assistant managing editor, John Kappas. Elizabeth and John, thanks for joining us today.
Nice to be here.
It's our pleasure to be here. Thank you, Dan.
Elizabeth, let's start with a little background on these awards. What's the process of determining who the newsmakers are for a particular year?
Sure. So, we've done this a variety of ways in the past. Sometimes we do it in December. Sometimes we wait until January, just depending on where the news is in any particular year. And usually what happens is the editors will begin making a short list of who we think has really stood out in the business news, the economic development news for the year. And we do that sometime in the fall. And then we reach out to our reporters and have them offer up maybe three people who on their particular beat that they cover, they think has really made news in the year that we're in. And then we get the list together and we kind of look it through to look for, you know, diversity of ideas, diversity of industries, racial diversity, all kinds of different takes of who made news in the past year. And then we boil it down. And some years we usually end up with about 10 people. This year, we actually ended up with 15 newsmakers. That's how newsy of a year it was in 2021.
I don't think we'll have time to touch on them all. When can people read and see the list?
Sure. So these will be online on this coming Sunday, and then in our print product that comes out on Monday.
Great. So if there's a topic that we've been talking about on the landscape over and over, it's this changing of the guard of leadership here in Northeast Ohio. Really generational change. We're not talking about a 65-year-old person retiring and a 58-year-old person replacing them. We're talking about a whole new younger generation. If that ever was more evident, it's certainly in the office of mayor of the city of Cleveland, Elizabeth. What are the expectations for the administration? How surprised are we with what happened?
Sure. So this was really a generational change. We had Frank Jackson, who was a four-term mayor, announcing that he was not going to seek re-election. And we had voters decide that they wanted generational change. And they elected not only a 34-year-old, but somebody who's never held elective office before in Justin Bibb. So here's a person who was a nonprofit executive who also has some business background, who decides to run his campaign. He's the first person to announce in January of 2021 that he's going to seek the nomination. And he really ran a grassroots campaign. That was a lot of door-to-door meeting with people, social media driven. So it was kind of a combination of the old and the new. And I think it really appealed to a lot of people. And he ended up, once we had the September primary, he ended up the top candidate out of that and went up against an establishment candidate in Kevin Kelly, who was the city Cleveland City Council president. And he ended up, Justin Bibb ended up pulling out the victory in November. And now we're watching, he's a couple weeks into office, he's starting to name his cabinet, what this might look like.
That was an interesting race. We had another very interesting race here, John, in that race for the U.S. House of Representatives seat that Chantel Brown ended up winning. Let's talk about the person that she replaced, Marcia Fudge. She wanted a cabinet post with the Biden administration. She didn't quite get the one that she wanted, but she did get one that she's certainly qualified for.
That's right. She, in Congress, she had done a lot of work with nutrition programs, hunger programs, and so she was interested in becoming the Secretary of Agriculture, but that went to former Iowa Governor Vilsack. She was named Secretary of Housing and Urban Development, but that fits well with her resume because as mayor of Warrensville Heights, she focused a lot on homelessness and properties that need to be rehabilitated. In fact, Warrensville Heights, under her leadership, adopted one of the first vacant and abandoned property ordinances in Ohio. And she also turned her focus there on predatory lending. Now, these are causes that she's going to champion at HUD. And HUD has already made some grants in regard to this. Cuyahoga County, for example, will be getting, the county will get $9.9 million in government money, and the city of Cleveland will get $17.7 million. So what it really comes down to in her case is we have a local voice with a national platform. And I think that's going to be important for the city, the region.
Elizabeth, I don't think it's accurate to call Chantel Brown a new face. She was on the city council in Warrensville Heights. She was the chairman of the Cuyahoga County Democratic Party. But it's fair to say that she wasn't as well known as former state senator Nina Turner, that she defeated in the primary to eventually run for that general election seat, which she defeated Laverne Gore to take over the U.S. House of Representatives seat. This election garnered a lot of national attention. A lot of financial support came from outside the county and the state. Why was it such an important election? Why were so many people paying attention to it?
Well, this race really has been seen as a bellwether to what may be coming up in the midterm elections and in the 2024 elections, because there's been a divide in the Democratic Party between your traditional Democrats and the progressive wing of the party. So the progressive wing of the party is where Nina Turner falls. I mean, she has been a big supporter of Bernie Sanders. And then you've got Chantel Brown, who's much more the traditional. She was backed by people like, she got endorsements from Hillary Clinton, Jim Clyburn, Sherrod Brown, and other high-profile members of the Congressional Black Caucus. And then on the other side, you had people like AOC supporting Nina Turner. So people were seeing this as kind of, is this indicative of the push and pull we're going to see in the midterms? So there was a lot of outside influence and money coming into this race nationally.
I don't want to get us too far off topic, but I just was thinking about the county, Cuyahoga County executive race that's going to, on the Democratic side, may end up featuring Mayor Brad Sellers and Chris Ronayne. Is it going to be a similar kind of race? I think in the case of this congressional race, I think a lot of people who supported Nina Turner could have easily found themselves supporting Chantel Brown if Nina Turner wasn't in the race, and vice versa. Are we going to have a similar kind of situation here with these two candidates? What do you think, John?
I think that both possible Democratic candidates in the county executive race tend a little bit more toward the middle than this chasm that we saw in that race. I mean, Chris Ronayne could be a little bit more on the center left, possibly, but I don't see it as an ideological race so much as one about who can get things done and move the agenda forward from the Buttigieg years.
I think you're exactly right on that.
We're talking about the Crane's Newsmakers for 2020. We're talking about the list with our own Elizabeth McIntyre and John Kappas. John, let's switch over to sports for a second. Last year, we saw Clevelanders finally solve an issue they've been debating for decades, which is to change the name of the Major League Baseball team. Why was now the right time for CEO Paul Dolan, who's our newsmaker, to make that move away from the Indians to the Guardians? They've been talking about it for years.
And the Dolans had to just make a decision. So this was a case of, you know, sitting back during a year where there were no fans to watch sports, sitting back and saying, how do we move forward? And I think that pause allowed Paul Dolan to sit on the courage of his convictions. By that, I mean, he made a decision. He knew it had the potential to be unpopular. They did consult the community. They said the team surveyed more than 40,000 fans about the name and did 140 hours of interviews. But once the decision was made, they moved ahead with the name Guardians, and sure enough, there was some backlash. A December poll found that 30% of fans supported the change, but 48% opposed it. But Dolan is sticking to his guns. He's looking at this name as part of Cleveland's heritage, referencing the Guardians of Traffic on the Hope Memorial Bridge, and he's looking at this as a way to keep the past, as a heritage, but get away from the controversy, get away from the accusations of racism, and, you know, hopefully once the lockout ends, move the team in a better, more positive direction.
Only time will tell, but one of the things that often happens in these cases is that people all will say, I'll never go to another XYZ game again. I'll never read that paper again because so-and-so has left. Do you really believe in that kind of fallout? I'm sure there'll be some fans who won't go back because they're angry about the name change. But at the end of the day, if you want to watch baseball, that's what you got, right?
That's what you got. And, you know, it's what have you done for me lately? Even in football, in baseball. And, you know, if the team can get some kind of positive energy around it, whenever opening day might be, I think that's what's going to captivate the fans. You know, they did pretty well selling Guardians merchandise around Black Friday when they finally settled the lawsuit with the roller derby team. So, you know, as people start seeing it on the street, I think it's going to shrink the number of people that are just adamant about it.
John, since we're on the topic of sports, let's talk about one of the big events that happened in Cleveland in 2021 that didn't involve any players on the field, and that was the 2021 draft that happened here. Where does this achievement rank for David Gilbert in the organization that he heads, Destination Cleveland, especially given the conditions of the pandemic?
Well, David Gilbert is also CEO of the Greater Cleveland Sports Commission, so he was directly tasked with organizing the draft. Now, Cleveland got the draft in 2019, and you know, the hopes were very high. But next year, of course, as we know, the pandemic arrived, and the draft had to go virtual, the draft in Las Vegas. And in fact, the pandemic hung over planning for the draft all the way almost until the end. Gilbert and company did not know until about 8 or 9 weeks before the April 29th start of the draft whether it would even happen or not. So when you look at David Gilbert's story, you see perseverance, because without knowing for sure whether it would happen, they had to go ahead and plan a major event in the city. And in fact, it worked, because 160,000 fans came to the lakefront. There were events all over the city. Now, Gilbert also helped organize the 2016 Republican National Convention. And so what you saw then and what the 40 million people on television and other streaming platforms saw when they looked in is they saw a city that they didn't think that they knew, and that's Cleveland, as it appears, to a national audience. So although they expected originally perhaps three times as many fans to come, it was still nonetheless a huge success for the city and sport.
David Gilbert happened to be the first guest on the landscape. And I've noticed as we look through this list of newsmakers, a lot of the newsmakers are, in fact, have been guests on the landscape. So just saying, you might want to make sure you subscribe to this podcast. One of those guests, Elizabeth, that was an early person who joined us for the landscape is Beju Shaw, who's the new president and CEO of the Greater Cleveland Partnership. He talked to Cranes about this generational change issue back in September. What did he have to say?
So, Beju could really, you know, see what was happening in Cleveland. And there's been this transformation where a lot of the baby boomers who've been in leadership positions for decades have either retired or recently announced their retirements. And one of those was Joe Roman, who announced that he would be stepping down from the president and CEO role at the Greater Cleveland Partnership. So this past spring, when Beju Shaw was announced as his replacement, I think it was roundly applauded around Northeast Ohio, because Beju Shaw has, over the course of two decades, really positioned himself as a promoter of innovation, especially in technology and medicine, and more importantly, as a collaborator. And that is what he brings to the table for the Chamber of Commerce, his ability to be a convener, and to make things happen, especially when it comes to innovation. So I think that's where we're going to see a lot of movement in the business community, is around collaboration and innovation.
John, over the last few years, Playhouse Square has seen some major changes in leadership. Art Falco retired as president and CEO in 2019. And now his replacement, Gina Vernace, is going to retire. Now, she hasn't been around since the days that the theaters were almost knocked over, but she has been around since the 1980s. What are some of her accomplishments, and has she given a retirement date? Do we know when she's going to step down?
February 2023 is what was announced in November. I think this is a case where the person not only focuses the story, but the person here is the story. Because Gina Vernacci's personal qualities, what she brought to her work, is also what helped the Playhouse Square, its national reputation, grow as her roles grew. And that really comes down to the fact that she dedicated herself to getting to know producers and directors on Broadway in New York City, so that when national tours of Broadway shows were decided, Cleveland was in the first rank of cities, with Chicago and New York and Los Angeles. We weren't in the second rank with, you know, even Minneapolis, or certainly not the third rank with Dubuque. And that comes down to that work that she did. Also, she got the touring shows that have very, very tight schedules to agree to extend the performance times in Cleveland, originally from 8 shows, now up above 20 shows a run. And that makes a big difference for the really popular first-run Broadway shows that come here that people are dying to see. You get that many more chances. Now, there have been challenges for arts organizations across the city, and Playhouse Square is no different, and that is COVID. So the theaters of Playhouse Square were shut for 15 months. And Gina had to find a way to get through that. But at the same time, Playhouse Square opened the Lumen Tower downtown, a 36-story apartment tower. So, you know, things were going on there. Now, in December, Wicked returned, the national tour of Wicked, and the theaters reopened. However, the Omicron variant was growing at the same time, so some shows around Christmas did have to be canceled. But, you know, the future looks pretty good, assuming that we get through this, the rise of this spike of this variant quickly. And whoever fills Gina's shoes has a big task on their shoulders, because maintaining those relationships is going to maintain Cleveland's status to get these shows.
We won't touch on all of our newsmaker people on the newsmaker list, but let's talk about one more, Elizabeth. Let's talk about Kristen Wisorka. She's a leader of one of the most important organizations during this pandemic, obviously hospitals, healthcare facilities, but the work that the Greater Cleveland Food Bank has done during this time has really been paramount to keeping people going during this horrible pandemic. And when we talked, she talked about the importance of making the facility bigger. And this needed to happen before the pandemic, but I think it made it, the circumstances were even more dire, the need to expand the current distribution facility.
Exactly. So, you know, Greater Cleveland is an area that's long been plagued by food insecurity. I mean, we're one of, if not the poorest cities in the country. And then you add on to that the pandemic, where suddenly tens of thousands of more people are needing food. And you're adding that on top of our already existing need in the community. So they saw their numbers explode. I mean, they were serving the community via the Muni lot, putting food into car trunks, trying to meet the need that was out there. And the existing facility for the Cleveland Food Bank just does not have the capacity to handle this increasing need. And that was the case even before the pandemic. So they have their existing facility, which is on South Waterloo Road in Cleveland. It has 127 square feet. They broke ground in 2021 on a new distribution hub in South Collinwood that would add an additional 200,000 square feet to their capacity, which would make a huge difference on meeting the needs that are out there. And they're going to see, you know, they're already saying that they're going to be seeing their budget is going to be $37 million for this year, which is up from $24 million in 2019. So when you think about that type of an increase, it's almost mind-boggling.
Great list for this year. Hopefully next year's list doesn't contain a lot of conversation about COVID. We'll just talk a little bit of business. This is the Newsmakers List for 2022. One more time, Elizabeth, this comes out on Sunday. You can see it online and the print edition on Monday.
Correct.
Great. Elizabeth McIntyre is our executive editor at Crane's Cleveland. Assistant managing editor John Kapp has joined us well for The Landscape. I'm Dan Paletta. Glad you could join us for The Landscape. We'll talk again soon.